Chapter 13 Part 1 Things never come when they are expected. My mind was full of Joanna's and my personal affairs, and I was shocked the next morning when Nash's voice said over the telephone,
"We've got her, Mr. Burton. Can you come down to the police station?"
I left immediately, and when I got there, I was taken to a room where Nash and Sergeant Parkins were waiting.
"It's been a long chase," Nash said, smiling, "but we're there at last."
He passed a letter across the table. This time, it was all typewritten, and compared to the others, almost gentle. "It's no use thinking you're going to step into a dead woman's shoes. The whole town is laughing at you. Get out now. Soon it will be too late. This is a warning. Remember what happened to that other girl. Get out and stay out."
"Miss Holland received that this morning," said Nash.
"Who wrote it?" I asked. Some of the pleasure left Nash's face.
"Amy Griffith."
Part 2 Nash and Parkins went to the Griffiths' house that afternoon, and I went with them.
"The doctor hasn't many friends here," Nash said. "Perhaps you could help him deal with the shock."
We rang the bell, asked for Miss Griffith, and were shown into the sitting room. Elsie Holland, Megan, and Symington were there having tea. Nash asked Amy if he could speak to her privately for a moment.
"Not in trouble over my car lights again, I hope?"
She led us across the hall into a small study. As I closed the drawing room door, I saw Symington raise his head sharply. I suppose that because of his legal training, he had recognized something in Nash's manner. Nash told Amy that she must come with him to the police station, and he read out the charge. It was about the letters, not murder yet. Amy Griffith laughed loudly.
"What nonsense! As though I'd write disgusting things like that. You must be mad."
Nash showed the letter to Elsie Holland.
"Do you swear you did not write this, Miss Griffith?"
"Of course I do. I've never seen it before."
Nash said,
"I must tell you, Miss Griffith, that you were seen typing that letter on the machine at the Women's Institute between 11 and 11:30 p.m. on the night before last. Yesterday, you entered the post office with several letters in your hand."
"I never posted this."
"No, you did not. While waiting for stamps, you dropped it on the floor so that somebody else would pick it up and post it."
The door opened and Symington came in.
"What's going on? Amy, if there is anything wrong, you ought to be legally represented. If you wish me..."
She lost control then. She covered her face with her hands and said,
"Go away, Dick. I don't want you to know about this, not you."
"Then I'll ask my partner Mildmay to do it."
Symington went out of the room. In the doorway, he bumped into Owen Griffith.
"What's this?" said Owen. "My sister. You think she was responsible for those letters?"
"I'm afraid there is no doubt of it," said Nash.
He turned to Amy.
"You must come with us now, please."
She walked past Owen without looking at him.
"Don't say anything, and please, don't look at me."
They went out, and Owen just stood there unable to move. I waited a bit, then said, "If there's anything I can do." He said,
"Amy, I don't believe it.
It may be a mistake, I suggested weakly. She wouldn't behave like that if it was a mistake. He sat down on a chair. I made myself useful by pouring a strong drink and bringing it to him. It seemed to do him good. He said, I'm all right now. Thanks, Burton. But there's nothing you can do. Nothing anyone can do. The door opened, and Joanna came in, went over to Owen and looked at me.
Get out, Jerry. This is my business.
As I went out of the door, I saw her sit down on the floor by his feet. Part 3. I can't remember exactly what happened over the next 24 hours, but I do know that Joanna came home looking very tired and saying,
He says he won't have me, Jerry. He's very, very proud.
And I said, My girl won't have me either. To which she replied,
The Burton family isn't exactly in demand at the moment.
So I said, Never mind, we still have each other. And Joanna said,
Somehow, Jerry, that doesn't comfort me much just now.
But Owen called the next day and went on and on about how wonderful Joanna was, that she was willing to marry him, at once if he liked. But he wasn't going to let her do that. No, she was too good to be associated with the kind of scandal that would soon be in the papers. I then went down to Limstock, first to the police station, where Nash told me they had completed the case against Amy. When they had searched her house, they had found the cut pages of Emily Barton's book in the cupboard under the stairs. The lady seems to have liked that particular hiding place, I said. The vicarage had been one of the last places to hear the news, and Miss Marple was very upset by it.
It isn't true, Mr. Burton.
It is, I'm afraid. The police actually saw her type that letter.
Yes, yes, perhaps they did. Yes, I can understand that.
And the printed pages from which the letters were cut were found in her house. Miss Marple looked at me.
But that is really evil. Oh, what can one do? There must be something. But I am so old and so stupid.
I felt rather embarrassed, and was glad when Mrs. Dane Calthrop took her friend away for a cup of tea. But I saw Miss Marple again that afternoon, much later when I was on my way home. She was standing near the little bridge at the end of the village, talking to Megan. I walked quickly towards them, but as I came close, Megan turned away and went off in the other direction. It made me angry, and I would have followed her, but Miss Marple stopped me.
No, don't go after Megan now. It wouldn't be wise.
I was just going to give her a sharp reply when she continued,
That girl has great courage, very great courage. Don't try and see her now. She needs to keep her courage strong.
There was something in her words that frightened me. It was as though she knew something that I didn't. I was afraid and didn't know why. I went back into the high street and wandered around. I don't know what I was waiting for, nor what I was thinking about. But then I saw Miss Marple for the third time. She was coming out of the police station. Part 4. Where do one's fears come from? Where do they shape themselves? Where do they hide before coming out into the open? Now in my mind, there was one short phrase that I had heard and had never forgotten. Take me away. It's so awful being here.
feeling so evil. Why had Megan said that? There could be nothing in Mrs. Symington's death to make Megan feel evil. But did she feel responsible in some way? Megan? Impossible. Megan couldn't have had anything to do with those letters. Owen Griffith had known a case in the north of England. A schoolgirl. No. No. Not Megan. I'm not the wife for you. I'm better at hating than loving. This is what Megan had told me. Oh, my Megan. Not that. But Miss Marple suspects you. She says you have courage. Courage to do what? I wanted to see Megan. I wanted to see her very much. At 9:30 that night, I left the house and went down to the town and along to the Symingtons. It was then that a new idea came into my mind. The idea of a woman whom nobody had considered for a moment. Wildly unlikely, but not impossible. I walked faster. It was now even more important to see Megan soon. I passed through the Symington's gate and up to the house. It was a dark, cloudy night. I saw a line of light from one of the windows. The little morning room. I paused for a moment. Then instead of going up to the front door, I turned and went very quietly up to the window beside a large bush. The light came from between the curtains, which were not quite closed. It was easy to look through and see the strangely peaceful scene. Symington in a big armchair, and Elsie Holland, her head bent, sewing. I could hear as well as see, for the window was open at the top. Elsie Holland was speaking.
But I do think really, Mr. Symington, that the boys are old enough to go away to school. I shall hate leaving them, of course, because I'm very fond of them both.
Symington said,
I think perhaps you're right about Brian. I've decided that he shall start next term at Winhay's, where I went as a boy. But Colin is a little young. I'd prefer him to wait another year.
Well, Colin is perhaps a little young for his age.
It was a quiet, homely talk. A quiet, homely scene. Then the door opened, and Megan came in. She stood very straight in the doorway, and I was aware at once of something different about her. Her eyes were bright and determined. She said to Symington,
I would like to speak to you, please, alone.
Symington looked surprised and not very pleased. But Megan turned to Elsie Holland and said,
Do you mind, Elsie? Oh, of course not.
Elsie Holland jumped up and went to the door. Then, just for a moment, stood there looking over her shoulder, one hand stretched out, the other holding her sewing. I couldn't breathe. So strong was the power of her beauty. Then she was gone. Symington said rather crossly,
Well, Megan, what do you want?
Megan had come right up to the table. She stood there looking down at him.
I want some money.
Symington said sharply,
Don't you think your allowance is big enough?
Megan said,
I want a lot of money.
Symington sat up straight.
You will be 21 in a few months' time. Then you will receive the money left you by your grandmother.
Megan said,
You don't understand. I want money from you. Nobody's ever told me much about my father,
but I do know that he went to prison, and I know why. It was for blackmail. She paused. Well, I'm his daughter, and perhaps I'm like him. Anyway, I'm asking you to give me money, because if you don't... She stopped, and then went on very slowly. If you don't, I shall say what I saw you doing to the pills that day in my mother's room. There was a silence. Then Symington said,
I don't know what you mean.
Megan said,
I think you do.
And she smiled. It was not a nice smile. Symington got up and went over to the desk. He took a checkbook from his pocket, wrote out a check, and held it out to Megan.
You're grown up now, he said. I can understand that you may want to buy some nice clothes. I don't know what you were talking about, but here's a check.
Megan looked at it.
Thank you. That will be enough for the present.
She turned and went out of the room. Symington stood looking at the closed door. Then he turned round, and as I saw his face, I made a quick movement forward. But suddenly, the large bush by the window stopped being a bush, and Superintendent Nash's arms went round me, and Superintendent Nash's voice breathed in my ear. Quiet, Burton, quiet! Then, very carefully, he made his way back to the path, taking me with him. That girl isn't safe, I said. You saw his face. We've got to get her out of here. Nash held my arm firmly.
Now, Mr. Burton, you've got to listen.
Part 5. Well, I listened. I didn't like it, but I said I'd do as he wanted. So I went with Nash and Parkins into the house by the back door, and I waited with Nash upstairs behind a curtain until we could hear the clock striking 2, and Symington's door opened, and he went along the passage and into Megan's room. And I did not move, because I knew that Sergeant Parkins was there behind her door, and I knew that Parkins was good at his job, and I knew that I couldn't have trusted myself to keep quiet and not go mad. And I saw Symington come out of the room with Megan in his arms and carry her downstairs, as Nash and I followed at a careful distance behind him. He carried her through to the kitchen, and he had just arranged her with her head in the oven and had turned on the gas when Nash switched on the light. And that was the end of Richard Symington. Even while I was pulling Megan out of the oven and turning off the gas, I saw that he was finished. He didn't even try to fight. Part 6. Upstairs, I sat by Megan's bed, waiting for her to wake up. How do you know she's going to be all right? I said to Nash. It was too big a risk. Nash was very calm.
He just put a gentle sleeping powder in the water by her bed. He thought the whole thing was finished with Miss Griffith's arrest. He couldn't risk another mysterious death. But if a rather unhappy girl put her head in the gas oven and committed suicide, well, people will just say that the shock of her mother's death had been too much for her.
I said, watching Megan. She's taking a long time to wake up.
You heard what Dr. Griffith said. Her heart is perfectly all right. She'll just sleep and wake naturally.
Then Megan moved and said something. So Superintendent Nash left the room. She opened her eyes.
Jerry?
Hello, my dear.
Did I do it well?
You might have been blackmailing ever since you were born. Megan closed her eyes again.
Last night, I was writing to you in case anything went wrong. But I was too sleepy to finish. It's over there.
I went across to the desk. My dear Jerry, the letter began. I was reading my school Shakespeare and the sonnet that begins, "So are you to my thoughts as food to life, or as sweet season showers are to the ground. And I know that I am in love with you after all, because that is what I feel."